Hello and hi from Slice with Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks.
I'm Tim Callender.
And for those of you longtime listeners, no, this is not a Babylon Podcast reunion tour.
Sorry, guys.
Don't get your hopes up too high, but we're doing something a little different. Actually, Slice of Sci-Fi is doing a lot of stuff a little bit differently, and this is one of them. We are going to talk TV today, and Tim's current must-see TV, Doctor Who, as always,
yep.
And also Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yes.
And I have heard Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is one of those shows where there is no middle ground. You either love it or you hate it. There's
yes. Yes. And I have to say I'm on the love it side of it. And not only do I love it, I don't understand the hatred from that side of the fence.
So is this a little bit like Star Trek versus Babylon 5 in the
No, I don't know. No, I don't think so, because for one thing, there's no rival show as such. It's not two. There are two television shows of agents dealing with super secret bad guy organizations and super powered humans. Although I got a sense that show Scorpion that debuted a couple weeks ago.
Right.
I got the sense that was sort of a S.H.I.E.L.D.-like show. But I don't think it really compares because it's still there's no super hero meta-human angle to it.
Hmm.
Okay? You know, it's just TV smart people doing TV smart things. I don't think with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. it's a Star Trek versus B5 sort of situation.
Well, I was thinking more along the lines of either you hate one or you love it. You hate one or you love the other, either way. But like one of our other contributors, Ginny Cook, she did last season a series of reviews for us where five episodes in. You watch five episodes of a show, give us a review. Mm-hmm. And that right. worked out pretty good. And she's doing a few more these season shows. And I said, so you're going to do a second season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.? And she said,
hell no.
No. She said, and I quote, absolutely, there's absolutely no way you could get me to watch that show again unless Chris Evans does an episode naked.
You know, I think you take the naked part away, and I think that is sort of my impression as to part of the reason people who don't like it dismissed it is that for a television show that's tied in with the Marvel Cinematic Universe, there is remarkably next to no superhero stuff going on. Okay? You know, you don't have Iron Man. You don't have a cameo from Captain America. You got a cameo at the end of last season from Sam Jackson as Nick Fury.
Well, didn't they have a cameo with Sif too?
Yeah, they did, but you know that to me, she's a minor character.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's not the average viewer isn't going to go, oh, Lady Sif's on this week's episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Not the same way they would as if Chris Evans shows up. Clothes on or not, you know. I mean, there's a different scale there. The other thing is that I recall reading people who didn't like it. They thought the characters were wooden. Again, that's one of those that eludes me. I don't understand that at all. Maybe I'm more forgiving. I don't know. And then, of course, you know, some people thought it was just looks like CSI with weird superpower things going on. And that's true. I think that was sort of the formula they were working with for the first four or five episodes.
Well, but how about this? Is Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. geared more towards the comic book fan of the Marvel Universe rather than the cinematic fan?
No, I don't think so.
Hmm.
I would say exactly the opposite. I think that if you're a comic book fan, and I don't read the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I think while there are Easter eggs that get thrown out there, they had the Absorbing Man in the first couple, three episodes of the season. And there are, you know, there's apparently a Kree body that has
capability. I heard that's how they saved Coulson's life. They gave him...
Yes and no.
Okay. All right. I defer to your expertise.
Yeah. It is. It's part of it. But I think if you're a comic book fan, you'll be sitting there either going, oh gosh, well they're really taking liberties from what S.H.I.E.L.D. is in the comics, or you'll be sitting there going, okay, well I recognize that Easter egg, but in the end, I don't think being a comic book fan, I don't think that's what that's aimed at. I really do think it's aimed at the cinematic universe fan, which is to say, a much more casual sort of fan.
Hmm. So in that case, I'm with you. I don't understand either the love or hate and no middle ground relationship.
Yeah,
people have with this show.
No, I'll tell you this from where I love it, and I enjoyed it from the very first episode. Part of it is I've really enjoyed the characters. I think they've all had very distinct personalities. In some ways, it kind of reminds me of a role playing game. And the fact that the characters are not only very clearly defined, they're clearly defined as to what they do. And there's that sort of witty banter. You know, if you're a Joss Whedon fan, I think it's, even though he's only nominally involved with it, I think his brother Jed is a producer on it, it's still got that kind of snappy dialogue. Yeah, there are moments in various stories where they go for the punchline as opposed to what might be quote unquote real.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a television show about secret agents running around in a universe that has superpowered people. So I don't expect a great deal of dark, gritty realism. Now, having said that, I find the characters very compelling, and much like Babylon 5, having a sense that the first season was going to lead to something. You stick with it, the last five episodes of last year were really, really intense. And the kickoff of the second season, they apparently, neighborhood of half a year has gone by. So there's enough changes in there that you go, oh, wait a minute, why is that person doing that? What's going on with that character? But it's not so jarring as to feel like you're left out of the cold. It's more, for me anyways, like, okay, how did they get here? And I know they're going to reveal it. And it's been a very, very intense ride.
Hmm. Okay, without getting into any spoilers, what would you suggest for the fan who wants to watch this show but now doesn't know where to start?
I would say that if you pick up either with an episode called Tracks or Tahiti. Those are pretty good places to start. Those are actually about halfway through that first season.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't need to know much about the previous episodes in the sense of, you know, you'll get a sense of who the characters are, I think, going forward. If you're not into all that tedious world building kind of thing. You know, Tracks picks up and it starts feeding into some of the bigger mysteries. One of which, of course, is how is Coulson still alive after apparently getting impaled in Avengers? And they answer that question. And it's a pretty intense and somewhat disturbing answer. And that's one of the things that sort of drives, again, without getting spoilerific, there is an outfit, if you want to go all the way back, they call themselves Centipede. And they are apparently looking at making another super soldier serum. But they're all very interested for some reason in Coulson. Why? Because there is an individual called the Clairvoyant who is able to predict what S.H.I.E.L.D. is going to be doing at any given moment. But Coulson's a wild card, and they sort of lure him in. And one of the characters working for Centipede, she says to him, you know, they're about to like strap him into a brain scan device and he's being resistant. She goes, Phil, you want to know just as badly as we do. And with that, he voluntarily lays down and finds out what happens. And like I said, it's kind of disturbing. And so, you know, about that point, you start getting into where events from Captain America, the Winter Soldier, start impacting the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. storyline. Mm-hmm. What with the infiltration of Hydra,
right,
and the fall of the Triskelion and all that sort of stuff. So that's one of the other things that I like with S.H.I.E.L.D. is that it's dealing with the messy aftermath of all that. And the second season picks up with that. Coulson has been named director, and while he and his small band of intrepid adventurers have to keep on the down low because the American government thinks of them as traitors as well, they're avoiding capture from their own government and still trying to deal with the threat of Hydra, which of course has gone back underground. Mm-hmm. With the events of Winter Soldier. And the episodes move along very quickly. Again, the characters are compelling. They go for some really strong gut punches in there. So, yeah.
Okay, so Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. gets two thumbs up from Tim.
Yeah.
Go check out the episodes. We will, I guess I'll put a link to, what is it, Tracks in Tahiti?
Yeah.
Because if it's not on Netflix, it's probably on Hulu Plus.
Oh, it's on Hulu. I don't know if the first season is or not. I do have a Hulu Plus account. Let me see if...
I need to sign up for that. Right.
I like Hulu Plus. Even though you get commercials, the fact of the matter is you get first-run shows going on.
Mm-hmm.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Let's see. What do we got here? Well, it looks like it just picks up with the second season.
Okay, so people would need Netflix for season one and Hulu Plus for season two.
Right. Yeah.
Awesome.
But I'm seriously, if you gave up on S.H.I.E.L.D. early on in its run, please, I implore you, start with the beginning of the second season. I think that's part of the reason they gave a gap in there is so that there wasn't necessarily a sense that you had to see what happened the previous year for newcomers. You know, there's enough going on that you'll be able to kind of figure out who's what. And give it another four episodes. And then if you give up on it, I mean, okay. You know, I'm too old to have fights about this sort of thing, but you know,
I'm just laughing my ass off right now because it dawns on me that everything that we've talked about coming in halfway through the first season or start with the second season, then go backwards. Those are the same arguments we used to make to people about B5, isn't it?
Oh yeah, exactly. I was going to make the point earlier is that in a lot of ways, that first year is like Babylon 5's first year, establishing the world, establishing the characters. They were standalone episodes with just little drips and drabs that spoke to maybe a bigger story, and then all of a sudden, kapow!
At the end, they kick
that's pulled, and you go, "Holy crap!"
Yeah, basically, they're setting up things slowly, and then at the very end, somebody comes through and kicks over the anthill.
Right. That's exactly right.
That's hilarious. Joss Whedon is doing Babylon 5, only it's called Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I love it.
There is, again, without being spoilerific with it, mm-hmm. There is one character who early on in the run was getting a lot of flack for a wooden performance. That character, well, that character has since been revealed to have been a Hydra sleeper agent. And so now people go, oh maybe that's why that person behaved like that. And maybe that's why the character seemed so flat, is because that character had to pretend to be something that character was not. And it's like, yeah, exactly. Right. That's precisely it. Patience pays off. And I feel that my patience has been very well rewarded. I will also say this about S.H.I.E.L.D. that I like. It's a show that I have felt very comfortable watching with my now college-age daughter. It's a grown-up show. You know, it doesn't pander to younger adults, you know, in the way like an animated series might.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not, I know that you'll get a lot of hate mail about all the other DC Universe animated shows, but my point is that it's adult, but it's not so graphic that I don't feel comfortable watching it with my child. And that's another thing that I like about it too. It's dark, but it has great heroes. It shows science in a very good light. Two of the heroes, Fitz and Simmons, are just really brainiac young people. And yeah, they kind of go on adventures with the team, but that's not really the point. You know, that's the other thing that's great about it, is it shows that intelligence sometimes wins the day.
Cool.
And I like that message as well. So.
Excellent. Now, before we get into our discussion about this current season of Doctor Who with Peter Capaldi as the new Doctor, we have a movie review from Darren Gulsvig, who saw the brand new horror movie Ouija. Let's hear what he thought about it.
Hi, this is Darren from Slice of Sci-Fi. Today, I'll be doing a review for the movie Ouija.
There's still a way you can talk to them.
You want to talk to Debbie?
Yeah.
When I first heard they were making a movie about the Ouija board, my first thought was, okay, well, maybe it could work. But then I was a little cautious because the last time we got a movie based on a board game, Battleship, it was just awful. And you know, conceptually, I think of those two movies, I think the Ouija board could work because it's tapping into one's fear of the unknown. Of course, I think that's why the Ouija board has lasted all these years, because it's designed to do that. When I heard about it, I was thinking, okay, this might work. God knows the horror genre has seen so many failures in my mind. There's so many redundancies and they're filled with cliches, you know, and I was hoping that maybe the idea of it could interject some new fresh ideas. And of course, when I saw that, I think it was Michael Bay with his Platinum Group, basically his production company had bought the rights for it or acquired the rights for it, my first thought was, I'm not the biggest fan of Michael Bay, and I think that sometimes the way he approaches movie making, It's obviously really grandiose and it looks visually amazing, but it's like, I don't know, it seems to be missing soul. But that's a whole other debate. I was somewhat excited because it's, again, a horror movie, and I think everyone can appreciate a good classic horror movie. Granted, I was skeptical because it is based on a board game. When I first heard that the movie was being made and I heard that Stiles White was the director, I first looked him up because I wanted to see what kind of past experience does this guy have. And of course, I saw that he was a production coordinator and looking at, I guess, worked with Stan Winston, who was an effects guru. And if you follow along with that genre, you'll know that he's been kind of the forefather of all the great FX and makeup and so forth. And so when I heard he was the slotted director, you know, I thought, okay, well, it's his first movie that I'm aware of, and maybe he could hit a home run the first time. So it's lots of questions. And so I think going into this, I was anticipating maybe a good movie. So was I satisfied? The plot for the movie Ouija is quite simple. I mean, it's just a standard cookie-cutter horror picture that we've all seen one time or the other. You've got a high school girl named Debbie who more or less messes around with the Ouija board, hence the name Ouija, and she does it alone, which I guess is a bad thing. And Debbie suddenly dies quite tragically. And when her friends find out about that, specifically Lane, who is Debbie's best friend, Lane is upset and, of course, doesn't understand why her young best friend would have died like that, and starts to talk to all of Debbie's friends, including Debbie's boyfriend. She decides to investigate a little further and finds video of her friend Debbie that Debbie had found a Ouija board in the attic. And again, this house is quite old, and so there was obviously some history there. And this Ouija board that she found is obviously from a previous family or sorts that lived there. So when she sees this, her first thought is to investigate that, of course, because Debbie and Lane had played with Ouija boards when they were younger, and that's how the movie starts. But when she sees that, her first thought is to possibly open the game and find Debbie spiritually. And so she convinces, Lane convinces her friends to join her and to try to communicate with Debbie, which is what the Ouija board is to be used for, is to ask simple questions and things that only that person would know about. So here, you know, we've got this possibility of some cool scares. And basically that's the whole movie in a nutshell, because you know what's going to happen when they try to talk to Debbie. Things are going to go bad. And so I'm not going to go in too great detail, because there's some cool things that happen as a result of this. And I will say that there's some good scares in it. I was quite pleased at some of the effects. There were a couple of times where I jumped. But overall, I just felt like this movie was just like every other horror movie that I've seen in the last 10 years. I forgot about it the minute I left. So that doesn't really, to me, stand out as a good horror movie. You know, something that's going to make me sit up at night and think, God, that movie really messed with my head. It's just a simple cookie cutter type movie that we've all seen. When we see these movies, we want to see something that is fresh and new, that really makes us jump and kind of messes with our heads. I mean, that's what I like to go see a horror movie for. And when we don't see it, at least when I don't see them, it just adds to my frustration. Here we go, another movie that just didn't work. And maybe that's just because we've seen this type of movie over and over again, and it just doesn't really work because we've gotten bored with the concept. So that's why I was hoping that when I first heard about the Ouija board movie being made, that maybe this would kind of create something new, because of the idea of communicating to the dead is kind of neat, which is why I think the Ouija board has been popular for so many years. It's just one of those things that everyone is told to stay away from, which makes people want to play with it more, because it's like the unknown. So the movie itself, I would recommend it, maybe on the point of just for a nice Friday night date night to somebody, but don't expect to come back terrified that you want to leave the lights on when you go to sleep at night. I guess it depends on also people's perspective. Some people may find it really scary, but I don't see it opening up new doors and breaking down walls. As a whole, this movie misses its mark, and I basically say, what's up next for the next horror movie? It's kind of making me cynical these days, so I just can't say that the movie is a success. So other than a nice scare movie to see on a date night, I can't say I recommend it. And this is Darren with Slice of Sci-Fi. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for that review, Darren. I'm sure a lot of horror fans will keep that in mind when they go to check out the movie this weekend, but I'm Summer, and we're back here with Tim, and we're going to talk now about Doctor Who.
Mm-hmm.
How is the new Doctor working out for you?
For me, I'm loving him. the first episode where he has his first full episode was a bit sketchy in terms of what the character is, and part of that is, you know, you have to differentiate the new Doctor from the previous Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's similar to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Yep, picking up the cat. it's got a lot of adventure. It's got good humor. It's the character, the Doctor this time around is a little darker. And I don't mean to say like he's brooding Batman level darkness, but he is clearly now not your friend. He'll do his best to save you, but he's looking at the bigger picture more often. In the first episode with Capaldi, he and Clara are investigating. They're in Victorian London. We get to meet Vaster, Strax, and Jenny again. That was fun. But they're investigating weird goings on, and they find themselves in the basement of what turns out to be the villain's lair.
Mm-hmm.
And as they're trying to get away, a big steel door with, you know, grated opening comes down, separates the Doctor from Clara. Clara's on the wrong side of the door. The Doctor tries the sonic screwdriver, doesn't open up. He goes, I can't open it. She says, well, give me the screwdriver. And he looks at her and goes, I might need it for later. And he leaves her there.
Oh, jeez.
Now, he comes back, you know, in the nick of time and saves her. But, right, there's that moment where you go, you know, every other Doctor up to this point would have frantically worked to open that door to save the companion right at that moment. But the 12th Doctor isn't that kind of Doctor. There's another episode where it's sort of a fantastic voyage inside a Dalek, which was really, really cool. But the Doctor goes in with Clara and some soldiers from a point in time where the humans are fighting Daleks, and soldier makes a mistake, and here come the Dalek antibodies. And the Doctor throws the guy a little pill, says, swallow this. And he says, well, it helped. And he goes, yeah. Well, then the guy gets vaporized. And the other people are going, I thought you said it was going to help him. It's like, no, he was dead already. This is helping us.
Wow.
Right. Right. And in the most recent episode, he lies. He tells Clara to lie to another character to get her to show up at the lab to try to stop whatever weirdness is going on. And she's like, you can save her, right? And he doesn't say anything. So she knows she has to lie to her new friend. And then afterwards, of course, the Doctor does save the day, saves his character, blah, blah, blah. And so Clara, at the end of it, is saying, well, you told me to lie because you knew how long you'd be able to save her. And he looks at her and goes, no, it just worked out that way. You know, I needed her to get information. And if she died, that would have just been more information and I would have gone on to the next person. Yeah.
Yeah, wow. That's you know, putting the mission or everything about the, you know, whatever needs to be fixed ahead of the individual people is so different from any of the new Doctors.
Yes.
I mean, I remember Eccleston and Tennant were the actual people were more almost more important to them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And with Matt Smith's 11th Doctor, you know, he was all about being your friend and trying to save you in the moment. And it didn't matter what those ramifications were. I got to save you right now. Now, of course, it always worked out. But, you know, this is a much different Doctor. The other two other items about that is the undercurrents or overcurrents of romance with the companions is gone. Part of that, of course, is this Doctor, the 12th Doctor, is, like I said earlier, not your friend.
Mm-hmm.
But there is clearly, with the actor, Peter Capaldi, being in his early 50s, I think it's a little weirder. Mm-hmm.
Well, do you think that's part of what they intentionally did? They made the age difference between the companion and the Doctor so different so that there wouldn't even be a hint of a romantic connection?
Yes, and I think that was one of the big backlashes that came early on when Capaldi was announced as the 12th Doctor. There it was, and at the risk of using a big brush, there's a certain subset of Doctor Who fans who have come to this because the actor playing the Doctor is a real cute guy, and he's a younger guy, and there's nothing wrong with that. I'm not. This isn't a judgment value, or you know, value judgment rather. But all of a sudden, the heartthrob becomes your dad. You know, I mean, and that's very disconcerting. Now, the other part of it is that Clara has been given a romantic interest. One of the things that's also really good is they're making her more of a real character. In the previous season with Matt Smith, she was just a puzzle to be solved. And as such, you know, she's felt really wasted. This time around, they're giving more of a story. She's a teacher at actually the same college that Ian and Barbara, or not college, but a secondary school that Ian and Barbara from the very first Doctor taught at. Coal Hill School. And so she has a love interest, a teacher named Danny Pink, who was once a soldier. And there's an episode where Clara's running around trying to date this guy, and of course the Doctor scoops her up for adventures. And so, you know, when she hops, there's this great montage of her like scooting out of the TARDIS into a cab, and he's looking at her and she's completely dry but it's raining outside, or you know, she's totally flushed and they've just been sitting at school, you know, all these sorts of stuff. And so she finally has to kind of tell him, and in the midst of all this there's a danger that's showing up to threaten the world and happens to be centered at the school, and the Doctor goes quote unquote undercover as the new caretaker for the school, and of course he's utterly unconvincing as the caretaker. But he runs into Danny, and this Doctor doesn't like soldiers, and he was a soldier, and they get into a big fight about this.
Wow.
And the Doctor is in the wrong. He, you know, the Clara is trying to show Danny this is what she does with the Doctors, giving him like an invisibility watch or whatever. But of course, the Doctor isn't fooled. He knows he's there, and he starts behaving differently. She's like, "What's wrong with you?" And finally, Danny turns off the invisibility. He knows I'm here, and they get into this big fight about, you know, what it means to be a soldier. And Danny says, "Oh, I know your type. You know, you're the aristocratic type. Thank you, and you don't have any problem telling people what to do because you think you're smarter than everybody." But as it turns out, part of what Danny realizes is that he just wants to make sure, like your dad, am I good enough for Clara? Of course, he helps save the world in this adventure, and the Doctor's like, yeah, this is a good start. But there's a lot of tension there, and he's not always in the right. And it's very, I find it very energizing and a very refreshing take on the character.
Mm-hmm. And see, that's the one thing I didn't agree with, what was it, Eccleston's Doctor. I never saw a romantic connection there. I saw there was this fascination. He had been traveling alone for so long. He didn't want another companion along because he was tired of losing them. And he just became fascinated with this spunky girl, Rose. And then it wasn't until Tennant's Doctor that you saw that he had compassion for her. He cared about her almost too much.
Mm-hmm.
And that made it heartbreaking when he had to lose her to that alternate dimension.
Right.
Because you saw that he really, truly cared about her. Maybe not in a fully romantic sense, but definitely more than platonic. And it literally was heartbreaking when you saw the loss in his eyes. He was devastated.
Yeah.
And that, to me, made the Doctor more real. I think it was, you know, it was also Tennant's performance. He's my favorite of the new Doctors. I'm just saying that.
Sure.
And I know I'm not alone there. But
right.
I never saw that with Matt Smith's Doctor. It was more of a he needed his entourage, but he wanted to protect them. That's how I saw it anyway.
Yeah, okay. Right. Well, I think there was a romance of sorts with the Doctor and Amy. There was, you know, it wasn't, the analogy doesn't parse perfectly, but there was definitely a strain between the Doctor and Rory and Amy until Amy made clear in the episode titled Amy's Choice who she really does actually love. Mm-hmm. And the dynamic shifts a little bit, there's no doubt, but it's clear that those two have a deep abiding affection for each other.
Okay.
As the story plays out. Capaldi with Clara, 12 with Clara, there is a... She is his, well, as he says in the episode with the Fantastic Voyage and the Dalek, it's called Into the Dalek, with very prosaic title. But as he is getting ready to be miniaturized and he insists that Clara comes with him, they ask, well, who's she? And he goes, well, she's my carer. And they go, what do you mean? She's like, she cares so I don't have to.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And that's kind of... She is more. I'm trying to
she's,
get the words
she's,
together.
She's the compassion he's forgotten about,
or has recognized gets in the way of doing what needs to be done.
So he uses her more as an emotional reality check. She stops him from going too far down the I don't give a crap hole.
Right. Oh, right. Okay. Exactly. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. And I think Capaldi is really knocking it out of the park with his performance. He's got this sense of what the Doctor is about. Of course, he's like one of the biggest fans ever. He's made the character his own. And the other thing is the stories, I think, are generally tighter this time around. There is an overarching plot line that I'm bored with as of even the first episode. There is some woman named Missy who is in the afterlife or paradise where people who have apparently died in their encounters with the Doctor are going. Don't know what it means quite, but I really don't care too much. You know, I mean, it's just it's like it,
that
after...
sounds a little contrived.
Well, and that's exactly it. I think for the last two or three seasons of Doctor Who, as much as I've enjoyed them, really have enjoyed them, a lot of times they've been like roller coaster rides. We're going to strap you in and we're going to go really, really fast, and hopefully it's so fast that you don't notice the giant plot holes that we've just scooped over. Okay, and a lot of that has to do with the big overarching multi-episode stories that they've done. So that's kind of where this is. It's like, okay, there's some other big story going on here. Thankfully, it's only been the tag of an episode. That's okay. We'll show this going on. Whatever, you know, can we just get to that and get it over with? Because I know it's not going to be nearly as interesting as what they've been giving us in the standalones. And the standalones are really, they're tightly plotted. They are logically consistent within themselves. And the characters are really compelling within those situations. Hmm. That's all I need. I don't need much more than that. Not from the Doctor anyway, so...
Well, hopefully we can generate some conversation here. Our Slice listeners, like I said, we're changing up a few things. If you want to call in an agreement or a rebuttal, right now you can use the number 602-456-9311. Or just, you know, record a little message and email it to summer@sliceofscifi.com. We will get the lines of communication reestablished. Like I said, a lot of stuff is going on, but yeah, all of the donations are changing. Anybody who's doing a subscription to a donation, hang on, I'm fixing that.
I want your money.
Yeah,
we promise.
Hey, literally, this is me. Literally running this show from top to bottom. One solution I'm looking at is Patreon.com, where people sign up to be patrons. You know, you make a monthly donation of however much, and eventually that might be a way for people to get access to older Slice of Sci-Fi episodes, older Dragon Page episodes that might not be online anymore. Haven't figured that out yet, but again, you know, I'm open to suggestions for stuff here, but I do need your support, and I am doing my very best to get us on a weekly schedule. Combination of interviews and exciting in-depth geeky chats like this one.
Yay.
And, you know, there's going to be a wide range of people who I'll be chatting with. You know, I might chat with somebody else about a different show. Tim might come back later to talk about Flash. I don't know.
I'll rebut the rebuttal to S.H.I.E.L.D.
There you go. We'll just make that a meme. Thank you for sticking with us this past year, all of you slicers. And like I said, there are some changes coming up, but I think they're going to be good ones. And I hope you stick around for the ride. Thank you, Tim, for engaging us in your favorite TV show talk this season.
Yeah, thanks for talking with me.
I also wanted to give a special little shout out to Sci-Fried for providing Slice of Sci-Fi with some awesome new theme music. You guys have heard it already. The open and the intro around Darren's review. Again, that's Sci-Fried. www.sci-friedband.com is where you can find more music by them. And again, your continued support of Slice of Sci-Fi through donations, subscriptions, all of that is welcome and necessary and needed. And again, thank you for hanging on with us during this past year of uncertainty and confusion. Yeah, that's the best way I can describe it right now. But getting back on our feet, and like I said, send me some feedback. Let me know what more you want to hear from Slice. If you want to hear something old, something new, something different, a little bit of both. Yeah, a little bit of both. Anyway, thanks for sticking with us, and we'll be back with another episode of Slice of Sci-Fi for you next week. Take care.